a time where Donald Trump is showing America what American fascism is, we can show them what a real American revolutionary spirit is. I mean, there's no better juxtaposition than Donald Trump crushing the rights of citizens who are protesting peacefully, crushing the right of the media. No better time or opportunity to show them that, quite frankly, the real Americans are the people who are in the streets protesting. The real Americans are the people who are putting their lives on the line because they see the brutality of this police state. The real Americans are the people who are not afraid to show that what's going on in this country is unacceptable. What this country does domestically is unacceptable. What this country does internationally is unacceptable. Stop allowing them to get the cheap wins by wrapping their fascism in the American flag. We need to wrap our revolution in the American flag. Not only because it's the smart and strategic thing to do, but also because at the core of it, it is the truth. The ruling elite of this country that are hiding behind Donald Trump is not democratic. It is not American. It is fascistic, and it must be brought to bear.
Yes, it is Friday, June 5th, 2020. Better back off my mic a little bit here. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our capital death cult paparazzi, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Today's show, Trump threatens to call out the military to suppress protests demanding justice for George Floyd and end to runaway police violence. In a speech from the Rose Garden, Trump called protesters terrorists. And in a call to nation's governors, Trump urged them to crack down hard on protesters. And we see the fruits of that all week long. In a surprise move, Trump told journalists that he has put U.S. Army General Mark Milley in charge of ending the protest in that first step towards the militarization of the coup. Yes, and that it seems to have kind of prompted some folks to kind of get off the, you know, the stick there. We got former Defense Secretary General James Mattis, the guy who Trump used to love to call Mad Dog to boost his testosterone levels, issued a scathing rebuke of Trump's desire to call out the military to dominate protesters. Mattis wrote, quote, "Never did I dream that troops taking the same oath would be ordered under any circumstances to violate the constitutional rights of their fellow citizen, much less to provide a bizarre photo op for the elected commander-in-chief, with military leadership standing alongside." That's right. And George Bush came out this week, came right after Trump. Seems to beat Nancy Pelosi to the punch. Why? Oh, yeah. Democrats are on vacation. They're out of session on vacation. How about that? Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti announced that the Los Angeles Police Department will see a budget cut in the wake of the George Floyd protest. That budget cut between $100 and $150 million. That's instead of an expected increase. The money from the LAPD cuts will be invested in communities of color, according to Garcetti. The city will invest in jobs, education, and healing, according to the mayor. And Dr. Anthony Fauci, remember him? Yeah, Trump's not talking to him anymore. Yeah, he's the guy, you know, the one guy with any kind of credibility and any kind of, you know, actual experience in managing kind of outbreaks and pandemics. And that, yeah, that guy, you know, the most prominent member of the White House COVID-19 task force, that guy. Well, he told the American Medical Association this week that the United States should have 100 million doses of coronavirus vaccine by the beginning of 2021. You wouldn't know that. Because Trump, number one, is bored with the coronavirus, and number two, is interested in fanning the flames of, racial oppression in the country. And play.
He's moved on.
Yeah, there you go. He's moved on. He's bored with the coronavirus. Time to kind of crack some skulls. Oh, then we move on today to look at more of some local at home today. Protests to end police violence and systemic racism exploded across the state. Hundreds of people marched in small towns like Souderton, PA, just yesterday. Right? Thousands flooded the streets of Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and other larger cities across the Commonwealth. From small town to large city, people were in the streets, and that will continue this weekend. This week's show that pigs can actually fly. Yes, indeed. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney took down the 2,000-pound Frank Rizzo statue finally, the fascist has flung the coop. And a huge win for Philadelphia progressive activists. Nikhil Saval defeated Democratic Party establishment-backed candidate Larry Fernese in the primary for Pennsylvania's 1st Senate District. Nikhil Saval is the co-founder of Reclaim Philadelphia, community activist, a DSA member, and editor for M+1. Saval ran a campaign right out of the Bernie Sanders campaign playbook. And it's now looking at a double-digit win over Farnese, who's held the seat since 2009. And Bernie Sanders, remember the guy who stopped his campaign and said he's out? Bernie Sanders pulled in about 20% of the vote in Pennsylvania's primary. Just a little nagging reminder for the Democratic establishment in Joe Biden's campaign that we're here, we're not going anywhere, 20%. What do you want to do with that? Huh? What do you want to do with that? But Nikhil Saval was not the only big news. It looks like the other six other incumbents were shown their walking papers in Tuesday's primaries. Dalen Leach is behind by nearly 20 points to Amanda Cappelletti, a candidate endorsed by Elizabeth Warren. Summer Lee crushes her primary opponent, Chris Rolland, by 75 to 25% margin. Looks like the building trades owes Summer an apology for wasting over $100,000 to run someone against her out of spite. But you know what? I don't think that apology is coming. The last thing I heard from them, yes, you can almost hear it, kind of out there. Do you hear it? Do you hear it?
Go play with your spidget finner.
Yes, that's what the building trades had to say. Get off my lawn. Progressive Emily Kincaid, I think is how you say her name, looks like she's going to oust conservative Democrat Adam Ravenstahl on House District 20 in the Pittsburgh area. Ravenstahl has frequently voted with conservative Republicans, especially when it comes to restricting women's access to abortion and necessary medical care. And Rick Kajewski, a West Philadelphia organizer, is narrowly ahead of Jim Roebuck in PA House District 188, West Philly. Roebuck has held the seat since 1985. Kajewski was backed by Bernie Sanders, PA chapter of National Organization of Women, National DSA, Sunrise Philadelphia, and the AFT Local 2026, among a long list of endorsers. Full disclosure, I've donated to that campaign. And in today's last call, Whitey's on the moon. Well, okay, not the moon, but at least the International Space Station. SpaceX and NASA successfully launched two astronauts to the ISS from Florida's Kennedy Space Center last Saturday. It was the first crewed launch from U.S. soil since the Obama administration scrapped the shuttle program in 2009. The fact that the launch took place during some of the biggest civil rights uprisings in nearly a century has us re-listening to some Gil Scott-Heron. We'll get to that. It looks like the whole 2024 moon settlement plan hit a bit of a setback as SpaceX Starship prototype exploded during a static fire test of the massive rocket's engines. Sean was very thrilled with that. He wanted to bring me down by sending me the link to that. He's like, sorry. Oh my God. And the Menzingers. Yes, the Menzingers. Yes, we're a bit of fans here. This is kind of like the example. This is kind of like the offline, online kind of viral components of the Menzingers, who's now kind of building a little fan club here. They just released a new song called America Part 2. They had a great song called America, You're Freaking Me Out. They got America Part 2 just released. All proceeds from the song will go to community bail funds. You can listen to the song and buy the song at bandcamp.com. Just click on the link in the show notes. It'll take you right there. You check it out. And while we're at it, Bob Mould just released a new song called American Crisis. It shows that the anger from Gen X, yeah, that's right, my generation, runs deep.
Who?
Yeah, right, exactly. Nobody knows. That's why it's an X. We just didn't know. We had something there, but. Thanks to my friend Stu Ross for sending me that. Stu, you know, the kind of American expat living in Derry. And Free Will Brewing is opening up outdoor seating as their main Percocet location at today's Peddler Village tomorrow. I forgot to mention the fact that, yeah, counties are opening up all across Pennsylvania. Everyone's moving in the yellow or the green, including, you know, the only ones that were in the red. That's Berks, Bucks, Chester, Delaware, Lackawanna, Lancaster, Lehigh, Northampton, Montgomery, and Philadelphia are now into the yellow as of today. And that's why Free Will Brewing is opening up this giant pop-up kind of beer garden bar with bathrooms and sanitizing locations all outside in this big yard space that's kind of in a field kind of adjacent to the brewery. So you can check that out. They will be observing the kind of rules for yellow, which is basically no more than 25 people in one particular area. There will be kind of requirements of social distancing for that, those things like that. But we'll see how this goes. The grand experiment has begun. And Free Will also has a new release for the first time in a while. And this one's a collab with Imprint Beer Company. This is kind of like moving into the summertime, folks. Because it's a strawberry lemonade Rodfarer, which is like basically a Rodler. And they took their cream ale and mixed it with some slightly tart lemonade for a hefty addition to strawberry puree to top the whole thing off. It's fruity is all they need to say. They've got another great beer too as well, which I forgot to put in. It's this is not new, but it's also released now. It's called Pool Beer, which is a cream ale with some lime, some key lime in it. Both of those are kind of really low ABV. The Rodfair is at 3.9 ABV. The Pool Beer, I think, is like at 4. Good summer drinking beer. Remind everybody, tune to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You stream the show live at freespeech.org. Tune in the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Make sure you download Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcast. And if you want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We're expanding our network as we prepare for the fight of our future, the fight of our lives. We're all in for it, and now we need you. We're not asking you to break the bank. We're asking you to become a member for the price of, I don't know, good beer once a month. So, you know, while you're out there, kind of as PA is opening up, take that $5, stick it in your pocket, and send it to Raging Chicken. Help it keep the media in the movement in the media. Become a member as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. So, Sean, you know, I was reading through just those, you know, the notes today, and I was thinking about when Trump had called out, you know, basically threatened to call out the military to suppress these protests. That was at the beginning of the week, and it feels like weeks ago now. I mean, so much has happened this week.
Yeah. No, we've been saying that on our phone calls this week. You know, it feels like last week was like a month ago with all that's happened and pretty much like everything that's been put on hold.
Yeah, exactly.
And no, I mean, I wasn't really expecting this to blow up the way it did. I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm not shocked. You know, we had a few very long days of rage across this country. And I mean, now we're seeing the protests and we're seeing, I feel like we've gotten through that part of like the rioting that's happened, and now we're off to the organizing.
Yeah.
And we're off to the movement building, and we're seeing that this week. And this is something I can't explain, like seeing how it blew up and everything.
Right.
This feels like a lot larger than Occupy. Like, oh, just from the initial first few days.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, look, I mean, you know,
I mean, like that. I mean, the police, even here in Harrisburg and around the state and the country, decided to fucking riot for the past week, and thinking that this would suppress it with a heavy hand, and it's doing the exact opposite.
Right. Well, I think like what makes this so different too, as well, is like, you know, I have to say, like Al Sharpton had gave like the eulogy at George Floyd's funeral in Minnesota, and or this was Houston, I forget where they had it, Minnesota, but anyways, you know, as much as I think, you know, his time is gone in many ways, he had a really good point, a really good observation, I think, as part of that eulogy. And he's basically saying, he's like, you know, I remember a time when I was kind of like, you know, he was speaking years ago, not that long ago, and he had some kind of white person in the audience basically kind of came up to him or kept there and kind of used the N-word right to his face. And he said this time he was out there kind of in the streets kind of talking to people, and he had this little white girl about 12 years old kind of come up to him and kind of tag, you know, like pull on his suit jacket. And he looked down, and he braced himself for what might come. And she looked at him, raised her fist, and said, "No justice, no peace." And his point there was there were white people, black people, people of color across the board that were together in kind of a movement against this, that it is a new time. And this time is moved. And because of the work of organizations and kind of movements like Black Lives Matter, because of the organizations of people like, say, Make the Road, right, for example.
PA Stands Up.
PA Stands Up. The people have been doing this on-the-ground organizing that have not let, say, for example, like people like Tamir Rice, right, not let that kid's memory just die in vain, right, that have continued to organize and deepen the discussion about racial injustice and connect it to systemic, say, police brutality, the militarization of the police forces, right, and systemic inequality, and calling for not simply just reforms at the edges. Of course, we need those too, but not just reforms, but a fundamental transformation.
Defund and disarm.
That's right.
I mean, that and that's not the end game. That's the starting point.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's first bullet point, defund and disarm.
Exactly.
No, I mean, the things I've witnessed in Harrisburg over the past few years, like I watched video of my friend getting spied on from police officers from a drone. He's a black friend who's a barista at Little Amps, just because they wanted to test out a new toy, and the cops approached him and questioned him.
This was the one down by the river? Was that it?
Yes.
I remember that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then after the protest that happened with the far-right wing rallies that were happening in 2017, the Harrisburg Police Department used that as an excuse to expand their budget and update their riot gear, because all they had were shields and batons and they wanted the full outfit. Even in Harrisburg, and then like on Saturday, the Capitol Police came out and pretty much started a police riot on Front Street. There's absolutely no reason for Capitol Police to be policing Harrisburg. They're not from our city. They're not from our county, pretty much. They're from the rural, ex-urban parts of central Pennsylvania, and they come into Harrisburg for work, and they just fuck with the black community, and they've been doing it for years.
Yep.
And they came in and they pepper sprayed a protester, everyone. Then a couple years ago, Capitol Police let a 350-pound like troll pretty much punch out a trans activist on the Capitol steps and do nothing about it.
I mean, this is who
this
they
is
have
just
become
in Harrisburg.
Well, like,
and it's and I'm sure there are cops who you see it on their faces. I've never seen that before, especially Capitol Police, but they are licking their lips.
Yep.
To fuck up people.
Well, look, I mean, this has been. There was so much.
And I saw bricks getting thrown. I saw a brick literally land within a foot of hitting a cop in the head. And that brick was probably launched 50, 60 feet away. That would have, could have killed him. that was the anger that erupted after the cops came in and pepper sprayed 60 or 70 people.
Well, you remember, this is what Rick Smith always talked about, right? I mean, this is what happened, right, in the early part of the 20th century, where basically workers and people were rising up against a kind of a brutal system, and they were tearing the country apart brick by brick. And the New Deal, right, the New Deal was the only thing that basically prevented from full-scale collapse, right? In other words, they had to have systemic, transformative policy to even begin to address it. And the New Deal by no means was perfect. I mean, in matter of fact, some of a lot of the issues that we're facing right now are connected to the gaps, right, in the New Deal, in the bargains that were made, in particular kind of not extending the kind of same equal extension or equal kind of protections and benefits of the New Deal to kind of black and brown communities, right? I mean, I think that's straight up the case. And I think that we need that same kind of stuff, because we're at that point again. And I'm not even just, we saw in New York City, for example, we saw police officers, the New York City police dropping off bricks, right, at particular corners, right, to kind of help protesters incite violence, right? That, of course, this is in an age of, cell phones and people videoing everything. So I don't know what the hell they thought they were going to get away with it.
And that's the thing about this whole entire week. I mean, like, if you've been hanging on Twitter, videos of police violence have gotten billions of views. I mean, like, at least hundreds of millions of views.
Well, I don't know if you saw
possibly,
this.
Like,
go ahead. Sorry.
I know. Possibly like billions of views. Like, you see these like police incidents that are just going viral and rampant, like on Facebook, or, I mean, on Twitter, just boom, one after the other. And it's like, no, people are plugged into this stuff. And it's like, I mean, like, look who's activated on Twitter. I mean, this isn't just like lefty political Twitter. This is black Twitter. This is stuff that's going viral in these communities and in these like hives through TikTok, through Instagram, through like, there's a whole entire like subculture of like organizing on the internet and social media outlets that I'm not even like plugged into right now, like with this younger generation that's leading this.
No, absolutely. And I think, and I'm telling you, and these are, there are smart organizers that are kind of leading this stuff. And I think, you know, again, you know, the big question is how to get out of the way. Right. I mean, how, this is where I brought up Sharpton, like, you know, earlier before we got on the podcast today, I said, you know, look, this guy's got to, he comes out and he starts, we are going to organize this stuff. It's like, no, you get to follow this time. You freaking baby boomer movers need to get the hell out of the way, and you need to let this new generation of organizers lead, because they've got it, right? Do you ever listen to Pod Save the People by any chance?
Sean is doing no, Twitter, I haven't. So, sorry. You know, no, sorry. No,
no. All right. So
Pod Save not listened to Pod Save the People.
So it's DeRay McKesson's his podcast. And I think Brittany Packett Cunningham, I don't know if you know her at all, but she's phenomenal. I mean, I think her like analysis and stuff has been great, especially on that podcast. But what they said is kind of like, you know, they keep on saying, look, you think what's going on here is limited to black people? Said like, look, the new generation is cued into the fact that, you know, they've already, because of Occupy, because of a range of other kinds of protests, they know that what we're seeing right now in the streets, when we're seeing kind of like the brutality against black people in the streets or black and brown people in the streets, this is just practice for the rest of us too, right? And they keep on saying like, look, this is what you see there, it's coming to you. Right, Ben Dixon is the same. We heard him in the intro today from the Ben Dixon show. Ben Dixon is kind of
Joy Reid said it last night on
Joy Reid of all people said it.
She was saying like they're coming for your children next.
That's right,
white America.
And here's a perfect example of this. Right, so this is where you have this kind of whole
and we're seeing it now in the streets. Dude, I mean, like with the cops.
So this is a whole idea under kind of like equal justice under the law. Right, this you've got these kind of military people coming out. You got some politician from, you know, Obama comes out and gives his nice speech this week, whatever, and then they're kind of saying equal justice under the law. Well, the police are taking that in a different direction. They're saying, oh, okay, that's right. We've been beating black and brown people all the time. Time to beat everybody. Right? So there's video that came out of Buffalo, New York this morning. I don't know if you saw this.
Yes, I did. I saw it last night.
Last night, I should say. 70-year-old guy goes walking up to some riot cops who are walking down the street. And he's like showing they got a paper or something in his hands. They shove him down to the ground. One with a billy club, one with his hand, shoves him down the ground. He falls back, smacks his head on the pavement, starts bleeding from his ear.
And they walk over his body.
Well, two of them walk past. One guy, this was the worst, right? One guy, one of the riot cops, starts to lean down to see if he's okay. What his pal next to him grabs him, picks him up, and tells him to move on, to leave him there bleeding. And then finally, because there's a reporter from one of the news stations that happened to be recording some of this stuff, is standing there. Someone realizes, oh, shit, we better get this guy some medical help. Right? And then there's somebody comes, then there's another guy who comes in, another white kid comes up and says, what's going on, to help the guy? They take him and throw him. Right? This is out of control. And look, and black and brown communities will tell you that this has been going on for decades.
And this is centuries. A problem. This is a problem that the Democrats have allowed to happen within their communities, either out of fear of retribution from the police unions, or like that's it, or they're just fucking bootlickers.
Well, look, like, look, they like Democratic Party, they've thrown in because, look, I mean, I think, you know, look, I think Sam Cedar is direct on about this, right? They are stuck in this kind of 1980s, 1990s mentality
right? 1968.
Well, that too.
But like, I mean, Frank Rizzo, like that type of like Law and Order.
Well, I mean, it's like, but they, you know, because they were so afraid back then, that came out of the 1980s of being kind of called like weak and all this other kinds of stuff, right? That they have to do this. So the Democratic Party leadership, right? Like the centrist Democratic leadership, the conservative Democrats, right? And well, what used to be liberal Democrats, who are now people like Nancy Pelosi, who are now part of that establishment order, they've kind of gone in, they got in bed with prosecutors, for example. Right. They have kind of like made their bed with the prosecutors and kind of tried to kind of like show that they, too, are can be just as tough. And now they're in a bind because half their base. Right. Is kind of like, hell no. Hell no.
And I think we just witnessed a like seismic shift, a revolutionary shift within the Democratic Party. Like, I'm just saying, that's it. Our relationship with the cops is fucking done with. Like, as a party. And pretty much as a labor movement, and as a labor movement, they're fucking done.
Yep.
Cops should not be part of the AFL-CIO. Cops should not, frankly, have police protection, union protections at this point, in my opinion. You know, like they lost a solidarity card. They're fucking strike breakers, and that's all they're good for at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how
they're fucking scabs and strike breakers.
I don't know how old to say it.
And they proved it this past week.
Yep. When you've broken the fundamental contract of solidarity with the people that you're supposed to be policing, right? And look, it's been happening forever, but it is ramped up. I mean, again, you can look, what's that? Radley Balco, was that his name? Who kind of did this amazing book several years back on the kind of militarization of the police forces, right? And there was a series of reporting that came out. God, it might be like almost 10 years ago now, about, you know, all these provisions in police departments kind of seeking kind of military surplus materials for their own kind of localities, saying that, you know, we need an anti-mine vehicle because we don't have one. Right. And God knows if we run over a mine as we're going to kind of like deal with, you know, the kind of ladies kind of cat stuck in the tree, then that's a problem. So there's been a gradual militarization of, you know, of local police forces. And with that has come not just the gear, not just the tech, right, but the mentality. It's like one of the things that I didn't put in the show notes today, but there's been emerging that there's these seminars. Right, that are going around to training police forces, right? Something like 60% of police forces have gone through these seminars or something like this. That and 200 plus days a year, there's an active seminar with police forces on how to kill people. It is a, you know, it's kind of coming out of this kind of like this Blackwater militia privatization of the military forces mentality. Those folks that go, the military doesn't even want anymore. So they go and they kind of go out and say, try to sell their skills to everyone else. And now they're selling the police forces and how to militarize communities and how to basically serve as kind of an oppressor in our own nation. And so, I mean, this has actually been going on, and now it's all coming to light. And we're at, again, this is one of these tipping points, exactly as you're saying. Which side are we on this one? There is no gray area. There is no either or. There is no, we can have it all.
I mean, like, literally, like, the images we saw over the past week were, like, the metaphorical hoses and dogs being released on kids. I mean, like, that's who's organizing this, our kids.
Yep.
I mean, like, it's, you know, it feels weird being involved. Like, okay, so I feel like an elder activist now, like being 30, but like,
oh, Jesus,
but no, but not like that. But I mean, like, being at the crowd, being there, like the average age is between like 18 and 21, I'd say, or like 16 and 21. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, that wasn't really prevalent with Occupy. Occupy was a lot of like 20, 30 year olds who did that. But like, mm-hmm. even getting involved in Occupy when I did, it feels different. Like, it feels weird, like looking back on it now. It's like I'm watching that next generation of activists just take hold and just run with it.
Well, I look,
and it's like they're just like, I mean, they're outmaneuvering people, they're using social media. I mean,
well, and the way they're using social media too as well, like, I don't know if you saw this was circulating around too as well, about, you know, there's some activists, folks from the Sunrise Movement were tweeting this out too as well, and like, man, it's dead on. It's like, look, we need to learn. Like, we need to learn these tactics. And they show a whole series of tactics that are deployed by protesters in Hong Kong. right? And they're just going through, and it's like literally, I mean, it's like, here, this is a lesson. We can borrow from this.
Did you see what New York people were doing?
No.
The past few nights?
Well, maybe.
The past three nights, they've been jamming all the cop frequencies with music.
Yep.
And just effectively screwing over their communications.
Yep. Well, and this is what they're doing with the, you know, people with the cameras, like doing, say, the cameras, and the cameras are doing you like laser lights. Right, this is one of the kind of things that they, you know, they picked up from the Hong Kong protests, is that you're looking at the observation cameras, they're putting the laser lights into the cameras, right, to kind of blur the ability for them to kind of target individuals and stuff. I mean,
what do you mean, like from the cops are using lasers?
No, the protesters.
Okay.
This is one of the Sunrise was tweeting from Hong Kong. Basically, what was happening, right, is that in China, they're using all this kind of like, you know, closed circuit TV and everything like this as a way to kind of go in, and they're being filmed by the different kind of police officers. So what they're doing in Hong Kong is they all have those little laser pointers, right? And they're pointing them all at the cameras as they're kind of moving through here. So it basically flats out the image, right? It kind of blasts out. I mean, little things like this. I mean, but that shows you the attention that is being paid to everything from tactics to strategy, right? And what's emerging in my mind is like, you know, this is how social movements happen, right? You know, this is where, you know, I just want to go through my go into academic mode here, but this is what you look at the kind of writings about about what happens in social movements, right? It's not something that happens in just like, oh, there's George Floyd and this happens and he gets killed and therefore a movement starts. No, the work that has been done for decades now, right? I mean, especially when around this stuff, right? Especially since Black Lives Matter has emerged, has been, you know, fits and starts, but each time learning from this. These are not folks who have kind of like said, okay, we started this movement and then it faded. Okay, we're all going to go home. No, they built on it and they learned and they got better.
Yeah. No, I mean, like,
and here we are. I mean, and thank God for them.
I mean, what's also like, what's also was interesting, like, is thinking about this week, like, we remember that conversation we had about like the organizing that's been going on, and then like the coronavirus hit, and then boom, it killed like everything. And you compared it to like 9/11 with the protests outside the World Bank and IMF, where it just put everything on halt. And I mean, literally, it's amazing to see like the coronavirus didn't do that. I mean, we're going to see how this is going to pan out in the next few weeks, but like,
it's not going to pan out well. I'm pretty sure.
But I mean, it's type of thing where people are, people are gonna get sick, it's the type of thing where the Black community has already been disproportionately like destroyed.
Well, no, from I think the coronavirus. It's at the point where, look, I mean,
like, and it's at like some people
point,
are like,
at some point you hit the wall.
I mean, like, our people are dying from the coronavirus. Like, this more disproportionately than like white people and other any other group of people, and then the cops are still killing us.
Right. Exactly.
For passing a $20 bill that exactly. might have been counterfeit.
And it's, you know, this, I mean, that's why I think this, it, again, the power of this movement and what's happening in this movement is so important. Where actually, I mean, it's so different, is because people know, right? Look, and you watch these protests, and the vast majority of people there are trying their best to wear masks, right? They have people going around with sanitation, you know, like hand sanitizer and all this kind of stuff. But they're doing that despite the fact, because they're like, we can't stay silent. We can't.
And people
do
are setting up supply chains.
Exactly.
I think like one other thing I want to talk about before, like, we probably break, but like, how fucking terrible the responses have been from mayors across the country.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Governor Wolf is failing us with this.
Big time.
Bill Peduto is failing Pittsburgh. Jim Kenney is failing Philadelphia. They're every mayor and governor pretty much is gaslighting everyone over what they're seeing on TV. You know, and like, one of the things that really, it seems like it's taking hold this time, and it really didn't take hold when Occupy, is the willingness for the media to talk about the police brutality that it's actually happening.
Well, and it's happening and like, to them too, which I think is one of the things was the tipping points for the media.
Yeah. Like, this week that there was a horrific incident on Philadelphia where they tear gassed protesters on Interstate 676. I think everyone involved with that should be arrested and had charges against them for excessive use of force. They were literally just shooting tear gas canisters as activists were trapped on the highway and trying to escape. And continually shooting tear gas canisters just to fuck with them.
Yep.
That was an inflection point, really, this week. It would happen in Philadelphia that really that forced Kenny to change his mind on the Rizzo statue and take it down. That happened. As that was happening, Governor Wolf was bumping elbows with the Philadelphia Police Commissioner to get a photo op with that, yep. Which is another huge mistake. No, I mean, like, we have to, like, realize and have to hold people to accountability that if you take the side of the police, we're coming for you.
Right. Look, and I think that I'm glad you brought up something about the media too, as well as something I didn't put in the notes initially, but I mean, you want to talk about one of those tipping points too, as well. If you look at what we're talking about, is we saw, you know, yes, a lot of news was paid attention. A lot of media was paying attention to the fact that a CNN reporter was arrested when he was doing a live broadcast. Right. But it's not just
Ali Velshi getting shot at.
Right. Ali Velshi, right, from MSNBC, basically getting shot at canisters. There's a journalist, right, was covering the Minneapolis protest. This woman by the name of Linda Tirado. She's 37, mother of two. She lost an eye because she was hit in the eye by a rubber bullet. Right. Rubber bullet. Right. And not only that, guess what? She wasn't the only journalist that lost an eye. There was an Indiana journalist. Right. Who was covering this and lost an eye to a tear gas canister. Right. As he was covering. Yes. His name was Blake Balin. Right. So what we're seeing here is that we're across the boards. Not only do we see the direct violence being inflicted on communities of color. Right. And the beatings that are taking place. They're also beating journalists and people covering it to prevent those images of what they're doing from getting out. This is like hands. I mean, I have never seen this degree in my lifetime, this degree of autocratic movement in our country. And I've seen some pretty freaking autocratic crap. This puts it all to shame. This is that step forward. You know, I had a friend of mine, Colleen. She kind of was texting me this morning. We're talking about what's going on in the White House today. You know, Trump's getting his wall. Right. They're building extra fencing and concrete barriers around the White House. Right. And arming those barricades in Washington, D.C. And she's like, you know, how close are we now to preparations for a coup? You know, legitimately. Right. I mean, I think we're at that point where it's not such a crazy question.
Like a coup like that. Trump gets taken out or a coup
that Trump is going to like sideline the elections under some sort of emergency declaration or things like this. Right. He's already bringing in, right, mobilizing federal forces. He's bringing in special forces that are trained in suppressing prison riots, and he's activating them to come in to be federal, you know, to protect the White House. And those folks are the folks that we saw lining the Lincoln Memorial with no identifying information on their uniforms, no badges, no patches, no names, because those are folks that are activated through the federal government's kind of and through the executive branch's
Department
ability
of Justice
to mobilize these folks. Yes. Right. And look, do I think that's going to happen this week? I don't know. But look, we're at that point where we got to see that is going on, that the very threat to the foundations of the kind of how we understand ourselves as a country and the end of a kind of military, you know, the end of systemic racism, systemic oppression, systemic kind of inequality, all that's got to be on the table in response to this. This is not about police reform. This has to be about fundamental transformation of this country.
Yeah. So I mean, on the local level, we're seeing some talks of it. I mean, there's breadcrumbs being thrown out, but there's also talks about truth and reconciliation committees, which is something that absolutely has to happen.
Yes.
Like that, that's just one thing that, like, we have to have a national, state, and local truth and reconciliation committees.
Yep.
In order for any progress to be done. Like, that's just,
Well, and here's the thing. And by necessity, right, and this is, I think this is a really good thing for the movement, is because police forces are local and state, that the activism and the call for those truth and reconciliation things happens at that level. And it's mobilized and sharing across the country. So we get away from this freaking hero worship bullshit of kind of like, let's only pay attention to, like, you know, the presidential election. No, people are dug in their communities so right now demanding for change.
One of the things, I think the Democratic Super PAC for Our Future did some exit polling in primary states on Tuesday. And like 60% of the people who showed up to the polls had police violence as a top issue on when they were hitting the ballot.
Yep. There we have it, man. So this is going to be, I mean, we're going to have,
this, look, and people are thinking about this going to be an election issue. Yes, this will be an election issue. And no, this won't be a 1968 Law and Order type election issue. Right. This is going to be a reforming the whole entire police department election issue.
Well, look, I think it's going beyond that. I think this is what's so important about that.
Yeah, no, this is
that
demilitarizing movement. Stuff in general.
This has got, look, you cannot address the systemic, like oppression, exploitation, and racism simply by reforming police.
We need reparations.
We need reparations. You need
a New Deal.
You need, I'm like, Medicare for all. You need the Green New Deal. You need right across the board. And look, you know, this is one thing that I thought that, like, the folks that did the leap up in Canada, right? Naomi Klein was one of the people that was kind of at the lead of this. And one of the things, if you read the Leap Manifesto, and this is, again, we're talking about, starts with climate, right? But the fundamental principle on this is that communities of color and frontline communities need to be in the lead, right? And need to dictate the terms because they're the ones, and this is what this movement is doing. Now, granted, you know, the point of entry into this was yet another brutal death. You know, I was talking to my wife about this last night, and I'm sorry to go off on this, but I was like, you know, what that cop that killed George Floyd, and those cops, I should say, because they all killed him. But the one who had his knee on this, there were cameras in his face, right? And he saw the cameras, and he did it anyway. Right now, there's other examples where people are catching this stuff on tape. These are people filming it in there. And for almost 9 minutes, that guy kneed him in the neck and killed him on live streaming video. And if that doesn't freaking send chills through your spine and wake you up to the kind of oppression that we're dealing with. And I think that is part of what has mobilized so many people on this. Is that guy saying, I don't give a flying fuck if I'm being filmed. I'm going to do it anyways. So here we are. This is not only about police reform. This is about getting to the core of historic injustice and oppression and exploitation in this country. We have an opportunity in the face of the deepest tragedy and disgusting display of that power. We have an opportunity to do something different and to make that leap, to say that, no, we're not just kind of tinkering around the edges here. We're going for the whole kit and caboodle. This is it. Boy, Sean. All right. Anything else you want to add in before we move into the second part?
Nope. I do have one late breaking news tip.
Run it.
This is actually be a great setup for the second part. This tweet came across. Just came across this new filing in Philly courts. Looks like Senator Dalen Leach, who is on the cusp of losing his primary challenge to Amanda Capilouthi, is gearing up to file a defamation complaint against Senate Minority Leader Jay Costa for libel, slander, and misrepresentation. So...
I think he deserves that one.
Yeah.
There we go. So we kind of split things up a little bit differently this week, right? So if you're used to kind of coming here, usually we do kind of national stuff first, then we kind of move in the PA. If you've been noticing, we've been switching that up on the podcast a little bit. Given the sheer I don't know. Given what's what's going on, we wanted to really devote the kind of first upfront stuff to this week to what's happening in the movement, what's happening in the kind of the growing movements and protests that are going across here. When we come back, what we're going to do is we're going to focus a little bit on some of the PA primary stuff. And I know this is the kind of stuff that's registering at the margins, given everything that's going on right now. But this is the kind of thing that is going to be part of this movement. And it's really good news in terms of what happened in the PA primaries this week. So when we come back after after this quick break, we're going to get into some of the PA primary stuff, and we're going to talk kind of in some detail about what's happening there, and then maybe look at what's happening with this opening up stuff maybe a little bit. So anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We remind you, you become a member of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/RCPress today. You will get access to our video feed. You're going to get access to some members-only content that is posted up there. And you're going to support Pull No Punches Progressive Media, right? We're going to keep the media in the movement, the media. Go to patreon.com/RCPress today. Become a member for those $5 a month. We'll be back right after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1947. That was the day that Secretary of State George Marshall delivered a speech at Harvard University. In his speech, Marshall made a call for the United States to send assistance to European countries devastated by World War II. He declared, quote, "The truth of the matter is that Europe's requirements for the next 3 or 4 years of foreign food and other essential products, principally from America, are so much greater than her present ability to pay that she must have substantial additional help or face economic, social, and political deterioration of a very grave character." His speech became the basis for the European Recovery Program, or what became known as the Marshall Plan. The goal of the plan was to boost the morale of the Europeans while strengthening trade ties between the U.S. and Europe. There was great fear among leaders in the United States that economic instability would cause European countries to turn towards communism. Through the Marshall Plan, the United States sent aid in the form of grants, loans, and technical assistance. Much of the money went to purchase food and manufactured goods produced in the United States and sent to Europe. This demand helped to keep the American economy booming. In all, more than $13 billion in aid was sent to 16 European countries. Some European labor unions objected to American intervention in Europe as part of the plan. This caused contention between different European labor organizations. As some unions affiliated more closely with the communists, others aligned themselves with the West. The Cold War had taken its toll on labor solidarity.
Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, here once again with the death cult paparazzi, Sean Kitchen. Look, this week, obviously dominated by the protests that's happening on a national level, but there was a primary right here in Pennsylvania this week, and holy crap.
Any other year, this would be national headline-making news.
This would actually even break through the coronavirus stuff. Right. Yeah. I mean, seriously, because this is, and you know, Sean, I have to say, this is something that you've been kind of flagging for us for quite some time now and saying that there's real opportunities to see some significant changes kind of across the state. So why don't you take us in and begin where you want?
I think so. Like we saw again, like I think 7 incumbents are on their way out, like from both chambers from 7 Democrats. You have Maria Donatucci losing. You have, Ravensall, Roebuck, Leach. I mean, I feel like there might be a couple more out there but you also had primaries that were once held by conservative Democrats go to progressive Democrats. Emily Kincaid, she challenged Ravensall. You have, you have Rick Krajewski. I mean, I don't know where to start. I guess we'll start with the biggest one, Nikhil Saval.
Yeah, let's start there, and because I think it really sets the tone for kind of what's happening here.
And I also think we should get a shout out. The Intercept reported about this. A lot of these people are within organizations that fall under the PA Stands Up umbrella, with under that like host of that network of groups. Three months ago, I would have never thought PA Stands Up would be getting the type of coverage they've been getting, mm-hmm. but a pandemic, mass protests,
right,
and a primary later, they actually cleaned up, and they cleaned up pretty well. So Nikhil is a Reclaim Philadelphia organizer, one of the co-founders. He got his the Reclaim started after the Bernie primary in 2016. They start electing people in wards in South Philly that were held by like people like Vince Fumo or Johnny Dock. This is the machine they're dismantling right now in Philadelphia. So Nikhil became a ward leader, and then he, you know, Reclaim helped get Krasner elected. They had some more victories in city council and in, the state legislature. And they've been pissing off the establishment for the past 4 years with all the victories. These two victories with Nikhil and Rick Krajewski might be the two biggest that they've scored so far. And this is just as big, if not bigger, than Sarah Inamorato and Summer Lee winning a couple years ago. Nikhil won by a crushing number, like 70-30.
Yeah, it was like a blowout. I mean, these are not just like small wins. I mean, that's a blowout.
I mean, like you look at some of these blowouts, like it looks like Nikhil is going to win anyway, regardless of what happened. I will say this, Farnese, he's part of like Machine Democrats, but I will give him credit for the past year and a half. He has responded in a very positive way with votes he's taken, with getting out in front on issues, especially in the Capitol when he hasn't really done that before. And, you know, like he responded like how most legislators probably wouldn't when they would get primaried, but he knew he had to save his seat, but unfortunately he didn't, and congrats to Nikhil for winning that.
Let me say something about that too as well. So this is a perfect example, right? Where, you know, this is where it's not even. There's so many layers about what's happening here, right? Because Farnese, right? You're right. I mean, he's generally been considered one of the kind of more, say, liberal or progressive members, right? I mean, he's not one of these like conservative Democrats that we see from kind of out west that kind of no, right? But what we're seeing is a generational shift. And we're seeing a kind of a further tilt to the left. And so, I mean, you know, again, we got a perfect example here of why this primary process becomes so important, because there is a battle that is happening within the Democratic Party, right? So it's not just about get the D in the slot. It's the kind of D that you want.
Yeah. No, and Nikhil's a DSA member. He's an editor with N+1. I mean, national magazines have been writing about him for the past year and a half, and his campaign, with his pedigree or with his like organizing, he's definitely one of the more interesting politicians, future politicians in this country.
He also got his start in housing fights. Right. I mean, he did stuff for the community, which was actually kind of preventing developers coming here and kind of like taking over housing. He was actually doing on the ground work before he was ever kind of entering this campaign. So yeah. He had some deep roots in the in the community before then.
Yeah. And so there was that. We can jump to the other one, Rick Krajewski, who also with Reclaim Philly, another changing of the guard. I don't even know what to say.
Well, let me tell you this. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's interesting just like from being at the PA Stands Up Summit and shooting that and photographing that. Like I have a photo of Rick, Nikhil, and Emily Kincaid all right next to each other, like laughing and having a good time. I mean, like, if I were to tell you those three would win their primaries and unseat incumbent Democrats, like, 6 or like 3 months ago, I would have said no. That would not happen.
Well, you know, it reminds me of like a reminder. Do you remember that, you know, there was a time at the PA Progressive Summit, which where we sat there was Summer Lee, right? Elizabeth Fiedler and Sarah Ann Morato, right? This is kind of, you know, before they won, right? They're doing a fundraiser and things like this. And it was like the three of them, right, were kind of leading this charge, right? And they were kind of supporting everything. And to see like this next cycle.
Finally, and the three of them are like the trendsetters for the people who did this.
Exactly.
For this caucus or for this year's primaries.
I got to say this too, as well as so a shout out to Rick Kajewski. Actually, he cold called me, right? I had no idea like what I was associated with, right? When he was kind of raising funds, right? You know, I'm someone who's, I'm sure I'm on Bernie's lists, you know, like this, I'm on DSA lists and things like this. And he was calling there and he said, yes, he's looking to donate to the campaign. And I got talking to him, said, well, tell me a little bit, you know, who about you? And he told me a little bit more. I said, oh, he laid out his platform. Okay. Well, let me tell you a little bit about this. I also run a progressive media set, Raging Chicken Press. He's like, Raging Chicken? Wait, you know, Sean Kitchen? I'm like, yeah, I know Sean Kitchen. Yeah. So that's how that conversation went. Right. So, you know, I mean, super, super. And I, you know, again, I had an opportunity to talk to him a little bit kind of more in depth than you would in just a kind of fundraising call. We just talked about some of the background of what's going on there. And I got to say, I'm just blown away, right, that he's coming out on top here, because he is freaking a stand up guy for West Philly.
Yes. They haven't called his race yet officially, but
fingers crossed.
He should win this pretty easily. Rick was running a 100% write-in campaign through mail-in ballots instead of running a like traditional get people out to the vote at the polls type of thing because of the coronavirus that was going on. And frankly, West Philly, that district, is all activists.
Yeah.
Like,
that's the heart of the anarchist community in Philadelphia, not to mention the kind of like
and progressive left, like
African American community too, as well. I mean, you have kind of like long history of kind of West Philly's, and you know Will Smith too. So, but go ahead.
Yeah, but no, but I mean, like you have that part of West Philly. It's going to be interesting. He wasn't expecting to be leading at the polls once the polling closed on Tuesday night, but you know, he was leading the four-way primary by like three or four points, and he's been building on his lead since. Another one we should talk about, Dalen Leach.
Bye-bye.
Is going down.
Yep.
He's losing to Amanda Cappelletti. She at this point is going to pull it out and win.
So would you say that
wow, she gutted him like a fish.
Sorry, couldn't resist.
But I mean, it's good seeing Dalen go. He could have been someone that could fuck things up in caucus with leadership votes and stuff like that. So it's good to get him out. And
well, I think everything for him has become personal now.
Yeah, and right. he's just filed a lawsuit against Jay Costa on the way out the door. So yeah, he's just not gonna. He's wasting fucking money by suing the Senate over
and time
this.
And resources and everything like this. I mean, it's all become about him. And look, you know, again, even if you're kind of a Dalen Leach sympathizer, you got to recognize that his ability to even function, even kind of and being a positive voice is been gone for a while now, just because he is so wrapped up in kind of the, you know, the personal drama crap that he's
suing really good friends of ours for, you know, bullshit.
For example.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And just being an overall shitty human being. And then out west, we had some victories. Summer Lee crushed Chris Rowland.
Yes.
By 50 points. Which, it was kind of hard to like widen that margin from her previous election, but she did.
She did. Did she ever?
She outperformed. But
well,
also,
you know,
I mean,
it's a perfect example. It's like, you know, people saw what she did once she got in office and everything that she's done. I mean, look, Summer Lee,
And the thing about this is Chris Rowland ran some pretty fucking dirty mailers about her protecting child abusers and child rapists and letting them into public schools because of the Republicans' poison pill of bill. And everyone voted it down in the Democratic caucus because it's already illegal to do that. And they're just voting on something out of redundancy.
Right.
And just to get to push Democrats into political games and make them take bad votes to use for mailer material. Like, this is Republicans doing this. And Chris Rowland decided to do that. You know, his campaign decided to do that in a majority-minority fucking district. And just think like the voters would depress the vote and take them as fucking idiots.
Well, we should say too, this whole campaign was based on spite and retribution.
Yes. From the building trades and those who are pro natural gas.
Right.
Like, and she absolutely owed an apology from Fitzpatrick or whatever the fuck his name is, Fitzgerald, the county commissioner from the county president out in Allegheny County, and like the building trades over this.
Yeah, I don't think that'll be coming anytime soon.
No, but like she thoroughly embarrassed them, and like they ran. Yeah, they should be embarrassed.
Well, look, it's what's going to do in the end, right? This shows you when, again, you're on the wrong side of history, right? This is what happens. And what that's going to do, though, it's also going to signal out there, like, you know, in effect, their power is great. Look, their power is so much decreased from what their perception was, right? This is what happens at a lot of times. They get an outsized sense of their influence and their power. Right. Until it's actually tested on the ground with someone like Summer Lee. And Summer Lee has basically shown that you don't have the power anymore. Is that you were given a pass. You got to coast on your perceptions of power and influence for the longest time. And the Democratic establishment out there basically allowed it to happen and bought into that narrative. And we've exploded all of that. We've shown that this is not true. And this is why also next to Summer Lee, right, you have got kind of Emily Kincaid, right, who's Kincaid or Kincaid?
Kincaid.
Well, she's also kind of like, come on. And she's actually one that surprised me. I had not followed that race at all.
I thought she was going to win. So the person she ran against was Adam Ravenstahl. And like literally like when he was dropping off ballots, I was asking Caruso who the hell he was talking to. He was like, that's Ravenstahl. And I was like, who? I was like, that's the first time I ever saw him in like 5 years of being in Harrisburg. Like the guy was a ghost, even back in his district. And like there would be a ton of community events. And, you know, the person who ran Emily Kincaid's district was, we had a really good chat. Emily, Skylar and I, when they were dropping off their petitions back in February, and pretty much like they knew that they were so confident then that they had this wrapped up in the bag, simply because Ravenstahl is out of touch with his district. He doesn't go to events. No one knows who he is, and he's connected to that old white racist Democratic machine that is the Allegheny Democrats. And because of the shit that happened with Summer Lee not getting endorsed by the county party, and because of Cass getting endorsed, you know, Heather Cass getting endorsed, who lost, she came in third place, a distant third, by the Allegheny County Committee. No, I mean, like you're seeing these old machines drifting, and they're not as powerful anymore. There's a few more races I think we should talk about.
Go for it.
Jessica Benham won, so she was the favorite candidate after Harry Reachall got Heather Cass the endorsement. So Jessica Benham won. She, another progressive woman replacing an old white conservative Democrat from Allegheny County. And then also Manny Guzman.
Manny, I can't believe I didn't put him in here.
Yes.
I've been tweeting stuff out about him. And yes, Manny Guzman. I cannot believe Manny. I am personally, if you're listening to this, I'm personally sorry. I've known Manny from Kutztown University, right? Where
I mean, so him. I met, yeah, I put a tweet out there. I met Manny literally 10 years ago when Tom Corbett became governor and decided to cut public higher ed by 50%. And, you know, like literally, like you remember this, I made like 300 flyers from the library. And just started putting fucking papers up everywhere. And a couple hundred people showed up. And Manny was one of them. And Manny spoke at that rally. And it was the first time meeting him. And it's pretty awesome seeing him. you know, go through the system, working for the PA Dems as the grassroots organizer for the past couple of years, and then watching him get this seat. So
congratulations, Manny.
Manny came in with 150 votes last time of getting this. And Cal DeGerone, thankfully, Cal DeGerone passed the torch over to Manny without trying to pull like a reach all on the way out the door and have their preferred candidate win.
So fantastic. It's fantastic for Manny. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like, there's other, yeah.
What about, I mean, I know that right now, last I looked, Shanna Danielson, the initial votes came in and she was like way ahead, but they're saying that it's going to be a while before the ballots.
Yeah, Cumberland County isn't counting their ballots or isn't getting them done yet for some reason. I don't know why. She, out of anything, she's in the most precarious position.
Yeah.
Out of anything, she should pull it off, but
was a tough fight. I mean, that was a tough fight.
Well, like, also, she had a mediocre white guy jump in from the Army War College.
Right.
Fucking saying that they should vote for him because he helped put together Panama in the 1980s.
God.
What does that do with politics in Central PA? I don't know. And I got into an argument with an organizer because he said, well, I like him because he's more conservative and he has the most likely chance of winning the district, so that's why I'm voting for him. This is an organizer saying this, like a liberal organizer, and I laughed at him. And this person emailed me and started yelling at me, you don't live in a district, you don't know what's going on, blah 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 blah. I'm like, okay, so you'd rather pick a mediocre old white guy over
Well, it's that same mentality, right? It's the same mentality as like, okay, if we get someone who looks like a Republican, then maybe we can win, right? As opposed to like, how about stand for something, how about that?
Yeah.
Maybe people like that. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah. So.
Cool, man. So it was a big, I mean, this is an absolutely huge, huge series of victories.
Yes. So. I mean, like, there's probably more I can talk about, but I don't even know what else is going on.
Well, we're going to see. I mean, I think this is a good lead up in part because, you know, I think we're going to know more kind of details. So we're going to have to come back to this next week too, as well.
And there were some scares too, that
Brian Sims, almost, for example,
who's pulling it out, Schweier, who's only up by like a percentage point. Like, they weren't expecting his race to be,
that's in the Allentown area. Yep.
Yeah. At close at all. And the woman who ran, Enid Santiago, again, is a PA Stands Up member. Like, and no, I mean, like, I think a lot of Democrats got put on notice this past week that there is a growing,
yes,
and coalescing progressive movement that is not only organizing protests, but is also going after your seats.
Right. And I think like Manny Guzman is a perfect example of this, right? Where you see some of the difference, what you see, look,
Manny's going to be more of a Democratic person, and that's going to be good.
No, I understand that, but still, yeah. But that's still a huge plus, right?
Yeah, that's a seat going from a very conservative Democrat,
exactly,
who was anti-abortion and said, well, I can't do that because my district is like this, when that was complete bullshit the whole entire time. And you're going to someone who is a person of color that actually represents
exactly
the makeup of his district.
Right, exactly. And my point was this one, right, is that why Manny's is a good example of what we see. Also with Shanna Danielson, too, as well, another good example of this, is that, like there had been, like, in my, again, you know, here's the old guy talking, but, you know, in my lifetime, you see, you have a lot of, say, these kind of progressive upsurges, right? And you have, like, this really, say, good candidate, they're all progressive, and they run, and then they lose, and then it's all gone, right? The whole infrastructure dismantled. What you're seeing now is, yeah, people like Manny, like Shanna, right, who have run, and they didn't win the first time, and they stayed, and they built up, and they organized, and they stayed involved, and they run again, and they do better. In many cases, they win. And this is what we're seeing exactly in this case, in like an Allentown, right? Allentown, you know, the Lehigh Valley, you've heard me say it 1,000 times, that is a future, that is the future of Pennsylvania. And what has to happen is, look, there's a lot of old school power structures in the Lehigh Valley, particularly in communities of color, right? That are kind of like, they're linked to that kind of, you know, baby boomer history, right? That needs to kind of, that new generation needs to talk, and it's been happening. And now here we see examples of that beginning to take hold too as well. So, I mean, I have no doubt that she's going to stay in the race and our state kind of stay involved, and we're going to see her next time around, right? And the good thing is that those folks who are the Democrats who have thought about themselves up until now as kind of fairly liberal are going to have to rethink their politics. And if they want to keep their seat, they're going to have to kind of wed themselves more to the politics of the kind of progressive kind of movements moving forward. So that's a great thing. Across the board.
No, I mean, I felt like the last three primary podcasts that we've done over the past several years really show the influence progressives have been getting within state and local governments all throughout. I mean, and not only do these switches bring the caucus more to the left, but these caucuses also makes Dermody and others who've been in leadership for a while go more to the left.
Yeah.
Because these people who just got elected aren't beholden to vote for Dermody, like if he wants to be speaker or minority leader, you know, depending on how the elections go next year, like in November. But like, I mean, I mean, you're also seeing it like, and it's going to like make the caucus more liberal in general, more progressive in general. And you're going to have people who want to get shit done in Harrisburg. You have another cycle of people getting elected who actually want to get shit done.
Right. You look at this, it's like, and it's not just one or two people on the margins kind of shouting in the void. Now you actually have a legit,
like six or seven came in.
Yeah. And like, and you add that to the folks who've already made road, you're actually kind of establishing a kind of, you know, a counter power structure within the Democratic Party in the state. And, you know, a serious, legit contender for, or at least influencer at this point. I mean, like you look at, not in the mass majority, but still.
Like you look at Nikhil Saval and Amanda Cappelletti. Like, do you think they're going to side with, like, who's part of the Democratic caucus do you think they're going to join? The Katie Muth wing?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Katie Muth, the Gang of Six, that's they call themselves the Gang of Six wing, or, you know, the old established, like, this is how we do things in Harrisburg.
I'm an old white guy. It's been around for a long time.
But, I mean, you look at it, Katie Muth's caucus just got two more votes in a caucus that's 21 people?
Yeah.
That's, you know, 8, 9 votes, yep. Out of you can start doing you can start doing some damage in caucus meetings with those numbers, and you could start doing some damage with caucus leadership elections.
Well, but not yet, because
that makes ahead, Jay Costa more beholden to Katie Muth and others now with these primary results,
right? But it's not just the damage that can be done, it's also the agenda that can be put forward.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, you know, this is what, you know, by having that kind of caucus, like
nine people, a voting block like that,
they could actually begin pushing initiatives. Right. And Katie Muth has already been doing this. I mean, well, whatever. I mean, so I shouldn't even say begin doing this, but they can continue to do that and build on that. Because now, once you have more people involved in pushing that out, and all people that are not just interested in signing their name on a piece of paper, but are actually skilled at campaigning and building power in communities, that's a whole different ballgame. So this is, this is really important going forward. So
yeah.
Cool. You know, the one thing I want to kind of say once again, I think this is really important. I know the coronavirus stuff has been kind of sidelined.
What's that?
Yeah,
I haven't heard of it.
Exactly. Well, it's this thing that makes you.
That was like last month's news.
Kills you. Right. Exactly. It's like what? It's like the spotted lantern fly of 2020. Right.
So now it's on the news. Doesn't matter anymore.
Right. Exactly. But this is kind of really significant and important because, Governor Wolf has put together this plan. Right. The red and yellow and green phases of kind of reopening PA, and
It's fucking insane. Like Pizza Boy, they put an outdoor like dining area, which is then putting up a couple carnival tents.
Yeah.
With picnic benches. And it's like, fuck that shit. Like I am not like going anywhere near these places for a while.
Yeah.
Like to eat out. Like I think like this coronavirus has just killed my habit of wanting to eat out. Like, and so I'm saving money that way, but like I'm not going out and getting fucking sick with these people. Like,
right.
Oh, I mean, like, it was a protesting all week. But...
No, but look, but again, we've talked about that, right? I mean, there's you know, it's one thing to say, hey, I'm just going to go out and kind of have a beer with some friends at a kind of the outdoor thing, right? That's significantly different than I'm going to go try to stop historic injustice, like, and then the killing of Black America and then the militarization of our entire, you know, those are different things, right? One is kind of, you know, historic necessity. The other one has to do with kind of like what we fancy, so to speak. So, but the this is, you know, again, the grand experiment is underway. There's more counties now have shifted into the green. I think what you're still probably still in yellow, right?
I think we're going into the green.
You're going into the green.
Well, we'll be yellow, but like,
yeah.
Either way, I mean, people are treating this like it's like fucking Mardi Gras.
Well, this is the thing I wanted to say, right? So, you know, I want to give people a sense of what this means, right? So, by my county, right? I'm in Bucks County, right? Bucks County was one of the counties that is was been in the red, right? We had the kind of the greatest outbreak here, right? In kind of this region, Philadelphia, Montgomery, Bucks, Berks, even, you know, Berks County was in the red too as well. Lehigh County, right? All this was kind of where it was concentrated and stayed in the red the longest. And in the red phase, that's when you've got the lockdowns and you got all this other kind of, you know, stay at home orders, all that kind of stuff. The yellow phase, what I hear people like when I'm out and about talking about moving to the yellow phase, I'm telling you what people are saying is like, yes, we open up on Friday, right? It's either or.
It's yeah. Big flashing white right. Neon signs.
Exactly. Baby. Everything opens up, right? Everything opens up. Everything's back to normal, right? That's what.
Boom, swing the doors open. Like.
Exactly. But what it actually means, moving into a yellow phase, right, means that, say, telework must continue where feasible. Businesses with in-person operations must follow business and safety guidelines, including masks and all this other stuff. Childcare may open, but they have to comply with these guidances, right? Stay-at-home order is lifted for aggressive mitigation, but large gatherings of more than 25 people prohibited, right? There's a list that goes on. You click on the link in the show notes, it'll give you the actual breakdowns. Because even in the green phase, right, telework is still strongly encouraged, right? You still have to, businesses still need to meet these safety guidelines, right? So there's, green doesn't mean like everything is back to normal, right? Because remember, the virus hasn't changed. The virus is still out there. So just a look, I understand everybody wants to get the hell out of here. And I understand what people want to go out and kind of like just kind of enjoy some of the weather when you're not protesting, right? You want to be able to kind of have some downtime to kind of recoup and kind of be with other people and talk about this stuff. But remember, we're not out of it yet. We're not going to be out of it for a while. So I'm really concerned about this, right? Just at the level of moving to yellow phase is that because when we move to the yellow phase, people are acting as if everything's going back to normal and then they're going to forget all those protections. You still need to wear your mask if you're kind of going out and doing this stuff. You still need to keep social distance when possible, right? So please, 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 please be safe, right? I'm concerned about what's going to happen already with what kind of, you know, the aftermath of kind of what's happening with the protest out of, you know, again, how potentially bad that could be. I'm the last person in the world to say do not protest. That is not my point. My point is that we need to take every precaution and not forget, right, that we also have these other things can kind of destroy our lives too as well. So be careful. So enjoy that little bit of opening up, right? Be able to kind of do some things. Be fine. Give you some beer recs here in the today's last call. But just want to kind of keep that on the agenda. So, yes, here we go. The grand experiment has begun. The opening up of PA is happening with all these kind of different phases. Let's roll the dice and see what we get. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We're going to be back right after this quick message with this week's last call. Yes, everybody, it's last call coming up right after this break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight.
Bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bills, but Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while Whitey's on the moon. You know, the man just upped my rent last night, cause Whitey's on the moon. No hot water, no toilets, no lights, but Whitey's on the moon.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is Gil Scott-Heron from 1970. And I thought it was only appropriate. I was going back and revisiting both that song and kind of a bunch of his music from back then, and in the wake of what is happening right now across the country. And it seems, I don't know, weird historical coincidence and ways of kind of refocusing once again, that what we're happening in these kind of, you know, the George Floyd protests and the demands for kind of end of police brutality and of kind of racist structures in this country is happening at the same time that SpaceX and NASA successfully launched two astronauts to the International Space Station from U.S. soil for the first time last Saturday, right? So you all know that, you know, I'm a bit of a space geek, right? That I'm fascinated by all this kind of stuff. And yet Gil Scott-Heron is probably one of those voices that came out of 1970. And that was after the historic landing on the moon, right? The first time ever kind of humans had visited the moon. That came out, right? Because the 1969 was just a year after the massive 1968 kind of uprisings in the wake of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King and the killing of Malcolm X and all this. And yet we have this, you know, this counterposition of these two events. And here, once again, we have this historic kind of launch take place in the midst of the clear light of day about the racist structures of this country. And those two things are kind of like in contradiction, kind of obviously, especially when we're talking about the kind of the massive shift of resources that is moving from all of our pockets and being put in the pockets of billionaires, right? So we can't even say that this is about the government basically saying that the government is using its resources in particular in order to kind of, you know, invest in space. But not only that, now we have people, for-profit companies, right? That's what SpaceX is. For-profit companies are now being entered into the mix. So it seems also that echo of Gil Scott-Heron's critique in the wake of this kind of neoliberal kind of market fundamentalist extravaganza experiment that we're going through, that's happening right now too as well. So I thought we'd bring in that kind of important critical voice to that discussion.
Yeah. One of the things I know, like I've been pondering and thinking about, especially the past day or two, mm-hmm. At what point do like the unions start getting involved in this? Like I know tomorrow there's going to be a union rally in support of George Floyd. And at what point does the economic... I mean, like right now we're talking about police brutality and disarming and defunding the police, but like at what point does this morph into an anti-capitalist movement?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly like, what I'm saying.
I mean, this is
what Ben Dixon kind of led the show with. Exactly. This is exactly this.
We're, I think, on the precipice of not just like, I think we're about to see the Bernie platform just fucking go crazy in the next, and not by like by will of the legislative forces, but by will of the people.
Yep.
Who've been cooped up this whole time, who haven't gotten any pay. That $1,200 check is nothing. And then like, I mean, like we were talking about this, the failed state stuff, but like earlier in the week, but like we're not delivering goods and services, we're not providing for our people, and then like this happened. Yep. You know what I mean? At what point? Yeah. I mean,
look, and this is why I think that, like, Ben Dixon's, when I listened to Ben Dixon's podcast this week, by the way, I should say this, is that when I became a member of Ben Dixon's show, I usually, when I become a member, I'll do it, you know, not through Raging Chicken. I do it through other stuff, but I accidentally put in the, put in info about this. So Ben Dixon does this thing on his podcast where he calls it the patron party, right? He kind of welcomes all new patrons or reads this out. And this is what happened. I'm just listening to this podcast, and this comes up in the patron party shortly after that.
Raging Chicken Media. That's Raging Chicken Media. I guess you go to RagingChickenMedia.com. No, you go to RagingChickenPress.org. Check them out.
Yeah, so that was like, I was like, what? Ben Dixon said Raging Chicken. So anyways, I just couldn't resist that. There's a bit of sound I've been having for a while. But anyways, it's like that was his whole... You know, that was this whole thing. It's like, look, this is this opportunity, right? Not just to kind of like muddle around the edges, but this is, you go for the whole kit and caboodle, right? This, you know, because like the inflection, right? Yes, racism has been here, right? For as long as this country has existed, right? But it has not been identical to each previous thing. And right now, the racism that we see in the police state is embedded in kind of neoliberal kind of like market fundamentalism, is embedded in the kind of historic inequalities. And these things are all connected at the brink of the climate crisis. These things are happening all at once. So will unions get involved? I don't know. I think that's going to measure about how effective and how important, how influential specific unions are going to be kind of moving forward, because the unions that join this and kind of say this is part of an economic struggle too, as well, this is part of a healthcare struggle, and the environmentalists who get in here and do the same thing when it comes to kind of climate change, but are doing it in the lead, following those folks that are building this movement right now, right? With kind of the death of George Floyd kind of right out in front, as his little girl said, "My daddy changed the world." Right, we owe it to her to ensure that happens right across the board, not just around the margins, but at the fundamental level. So, how's that for fun stuff in the last call?
So, one last thing I wanted to say about the protest in D.C. this morning: the mayor of D.C. went to Lafayette Plaza or Lafayette Square and put a sign up right next to the Episcopal Church that read "Black Lives Matter Plaza." Northwest.
That's awesome.
Yes.
She's great.
As a fuck you to Trump.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about his Bible banging crap, but.
Yeah.
But like, I should say one of the best reads I've seen on it this week, I wish I could remember where it was. It's in one of my list of stuff from this week, was that was not about piety. It was about power. Right. I think it was a piece that came out in The Atlantic maybe or something like that. But I think that's absolutely right. It's like even as bizarre as that all said, what that all those images, all that symbolic stuff, even, you know, he went to Pope John Paul. Did you see that whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just stood there. Right. Because those are images that are meant to signify particular like accordances of power moving forward. This is the kind of shit that Masa Gessen was talking about this too as well, on Chris Hayes last night too as well. But anyways,
and then I need to go back and read Masa Gessen's New York book NYBR article, like the six steps of like fighting autocracy.
Yeah, she got a new book that just came out too as well. That's kind of like surviving it or something like this.
Yeah, and then speaking about stuff we haven't really talked about, like the music.
The music! It's been a while.
Yes. The Menzingers came out with an awesome rendition. They literally threw it together within like 3 or 4 days within like 3 days of the church, Trump going to the church, they put this fucking song together. Just going after that. I guess
right, I'll do this. I don't know if you're gonna be able to hear this, Sean. So I just want to play people a small clip of the to kind of encourage you to click on the link and go and buy this track from the Menzingers. Okay, this is one thing that says I'll tell you the lyrics, and this is the section you're gonna hear. Well, George Floyd was murdered by a cop. The whole world saw the video and watched. Now justice is long overdue. Grab your pitchforks. We're heading to Pennsylvania Avenue. So here's that little clip.
George Floyd was murdered by a cop. The whole world
That's right there. So it's right there. And all proceeds are going to bail funds. Is that right, Sean?
Yes. Community bail funds. So it's $1 for the song. Definitely worth getting. And yeah.
Yeah, go for it. So Menziger. So yeah, this is something that Sean popped up right before the show today, right?
Yes. So Rosso, Eric, my friend, my boss, who got me hooked on this, said, here you go. He's like, check this out. And I'm just like, oh my God, I need this. But like, I didn't really get it at first because like the first verse is pretty similar. Is like word for word.
It's the same lyrics, yeah.
Yeah, the same lyrics, but they switched up like after the first verse and it's great. I love the one part. I hope the devil and Donald and Mitch McConnell rot in hell for all tomorrows.
Yep. There you go.
I mean, straight to the point.
Yeah, here's one. Well, the president gassed protesters for a photo op in front of a church. He waved a Bible all around, said, come on, God, you better fear me now. Yes, it's that kind of song, everybody. So click on the link. Go to the Menzikers. It's available on Bandcamp.com. And you get it for as little as $5. Or, I mean, $1. I put in for $5 because if it's going to bail funds, it's a good idea.
One thing with this is... yeah, I mean, like, we're going to need protest music to get through this. And, like, I'm glad people are stepping up and doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been waiting for it, I'll tell you. And I think, you know, this is where Bob Mould just released a song. He's got an EP that's coming out in, I think, in September. They're planning on releasing it. It's called American Crisis. And they sent it out early, kind of in the wake of all this. And for those people who don't know, Bob Mould, he was, like, you know, head of, Husker Du. And he, you know, went kind of solo. He's kind of come from my generation. And I have to say there's a lot about that song, American Crisis, that kind of resonates with it because, like, you know, there's, you know, I grew up in the punk community and there's, you know, those of us who were wedged in the Reagan, you know, growing up under Reagan and the Cold War and all that kind of garbage, but without the kind of a corresponding political power, watching the baby boomers kind of like go their own direction and then, you know, sitting around. So there's a lot of pent up, say, anger and kind of memory and kind of almost visceral memory of what that meant. So shout out to my friend Stu, who's over there in kind of Derry, Ireland, Northern Ireland, for sending me that too as well. So Bob Mould's got a great song there too as well. And we're going to have to keep on coming back to this, I think.
Whatchamacallit. So AFL-CIO just put on Twitter the two photos of their building getting boarded up. And it's all black. The boards are all black to say Black Lives Matter on it, AFL-CIO.
Awesome.
Yes. Awesome. And then criminal justice reform now. AFL-CIO supports.
That's a good move. That's a good move.
Yeah. Their building was torched their lobbies were torched over the past week. That's been going on, and it's good to see them come out in a good way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because that could have gone the other direction. I'm glad to see what they're doing. Good. Excellent. Yes.
And their photo that they're using is the pride flag that includes black and brown people for it. So
nice. Awesome. I want to give a shout out to Free Will Brewing. As uneasy as I feel about this whole kind of opening up thing, I'm certainly not going to be out there, but like, if you're the kind of person that's looking to some place to go outside and go there, Free Will Brewing is opening up their outdoor seating. There's a big field that's kind of next to their brewery, next to their south parking lot, I think. They're going to have, basically they're doing a beer garden, right? And there's going to be a pop-up bar. They're going to have bathrooms and sanitizing stations there. Frankly, you know, all love to Free Will, but, I don't trust people, doing what they need to do. I think the people that are going to be there first are not going to be the kind of people I want to be around. Just saying, but, they still have their kind of takeout stuff. You can go to kind of, you can go to their store, right? Well, freewillbrewing.store. They've got two new releases. Oh, actually, one new release and another kind of old beer that's being released for the summer. As I mentioned there, you got this one. It's called a Strawberry Lemonade Rodfarer, and this is the description of it. They took cream ale-based their cream ale-based and mixed it with some slightly tart lemonade before a hefty addition of strawberry puree to top the whole thing off. It's fruity and all we need to say, 3.9% ABV, nice and light. I have to say, the Rodfarer kind of struck a chord with me. weeks. I remember when I studied in Germany one summer, and there was also this place in Germany. It's called the Weinstraße, right? It's just kind of like a series of mountains and things like this where they grow a bunch of the grapes and stuff. But anyways, I was in Heidelberg is kind of where I was based for a long time or for a while. And there was a bike trail that ran from, you know, Heidelberg, just kind of all up and down through these mountains. And it ran along kind of like the basing. It was kind of cool. Is that as you kind of came into a town, the bike trail would go behind all these series of shops and stuff. So these like restaurants and pubs and things like this, they had these huge outdoor decks that catered to people who were riding their bikes. So you pull up your bike, sit there, kind of sit out in the patio, and the drink of choice for that was a Radler, right? Which was the kind of beer and lemonade mix. And it was kind of nice, refreshing, wasn't really heavy, right? It's nice to stop for a drink kind of as you're going for a long bike ride. So that kind of brought that back and there. They also have their pool beer, which is released, which is it's another another one of their cream ales, their summer cream ales with some a key lime kind of thrown in, which is absolutely fabulous too as well. So those are both available right now on their online store. You can go and you can pick it up just like usual. You go to their freewillbrewing.store. You can order the stuff there and you'll have it ready for you to pick it up. Still need to wear your mask when you're going to pick it up. And if you're the kind of person that decides that you're going to take a shot and take a risk at outdoor seating, they're going to have that available there too as well. So feels kind of weird to kind of be even talking about the opening up stuff, to be honest with you. But yeah.
Yeah.
So what else you got going on, Sean? Anything kind of cool going on for the weekend?
There's going to be a couple more protests this weekend. Harrisburg is shutting down Second Street tomorrow to allow all the restaurants to open and the people to eat and drink outside on Second Street from 6 to 10. So that will be interesting. I ran a lens for that. I ran a lens for the gun rally on Monday, but the gun rally got canceled. Daryl Metcalf canceled the gun rally and blamed Black Lives Matter protesters for that.
Oh God. Oh my God.
Daryl Metcalf.
He was looking, you know, he was looking for a way out.
Oh God. Like you would imagine having like 500 fucking angry high school, college students, kids show up to that like and shut it down like maybe the first time you ever see a black person outside the Capitol. Ooh, but there's a whole lot of controversy around that to begin with. A fake profile created a fake Facebook page created a event to bring to like goad counter protesters into the gun rally by labeling it a Black Lives Matter march. And it was one of these like boogaloo groups that had George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and then another person who was killed by the cops, but it's someone that the right wing is turning into like a martyr. So they wanted to like try to like use that way as a blend them in. It was truly like a fucked up like something that would happen like Russians used in 2016.
Right.
Like, same
right,
tactics
right.
with that. Set it like established dueling rallies to like create sow discord. They canceled the rally, so that's not happening. And then Sunday, 11 o'clock at the Capitol steps, there's gonna be another large march in Harrisburg. I don't know how big this will be, but like the last couple ones been 250, 300 people a time. And last Saturday, I'd say there's at least 500 to 1,000 people who showed up.
Crazy. So, be careful out there. I know there was a protest that was originally scheduled for Quakertown. There was basically a group of high school students who were planning a march this past week in Quakertown, but they started getting threats that someone was going to blow things up and burn the town down. And so that the organizers immediately canceled the protest, and now they're going to have this Saturday. They're going to be they've worked with actually police to host an event this Saturday. So they're basically have the protection because basically looking that there's Quakertown has got some kind of right wing kind of roots there. So I'm sure those protesters are being launched there, but there is going to be a kind of one tomorrow. You check out information. I'll try to put the links in here. And there's also in Doylestown this weekend, I believe on Sunday, they're going to have a protest there too as well. So if you can make it out to one of the protests, otherwise, I want everybody to stay safe and let's organize for the long haul on this one.
So, yep.
Cool.
Oh, and then Eugene DePasquale race was officially called. He won his primary.
Boom. There you go. Good. That's going to be fun going to the fall. Yep. All right, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us. It's been, I don't even know what to say about the end of this week. It doesn't feel like it's the end of the week. It feels like we're still in the middle of something growing and burgeoning. But stay safe. You know, keep your social distancing going. Fight hard. Organize. Do whatever you can in order to kind of support in this movement. And if you're, you know, someone who's at risk for that kind of like infections and that kind of stuff, you can use your, you know, everything you can on social media in order to kind of get the word out and help kind of bolster the message of people that are in the streets. You can help kind of donate to organizations that are helping organize these things. You can help support our future, really. And remind everybody that you can also support progressive homegrown media right here with Raging Chicken Press. You can go to patreon.com/RC Press today. Become a member for as little as $5 a month. That's all we got this week, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, sitting here with the Death Cult paparazzi, Sean Kitchen himself. We will talk to you next week. Who the hell knows what this week's going to bring? Here we go. See ya!
In a time where Donald Trump is showing America what American fascism is, we can show them what a real American revolutionary spirit is. I mean, there's no better juxtaposition than Donald Trump crushing the rights of citizens who are protesting peacefully, crushing the right of the media. No better time or opportunity to show them that, quite frankly, the real Americans are the people who are in the streets protesting. The real Americans are the people who are putting their lives on the line because they see the brutality of this police state. The real Americans are the people who are not afraid to show that what's going on in this country is unacceptable. What this country does domestically is unacceptable. What this country does internationally is unacceptable. Stop allowing them to get the cheap wins by wrapping their fascism in the American flag. We need to wrap our revolution in the American flag. Not only because it's the smart and strategic thing to do, but also because at the core of it, it is the truth. The ruling elite of this country that are hiding behind Donald Trump is not democratic. It is not American. It is fascistic, and it must be brought to bear.